effective voice and data solutions.
It's time for Fed Talk, the live show for Feds in the know. From federal agencies to Capitol Hill, the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth bring in experts from across the federal community to bring you inside the issues. Fed Talk is meant to provide general information about legal issues. However, the views expressed in this program are not intended to provide legal counseling. Listeners are cautioned not to rely upon any statements made in resolving legal issues they may face, but instead to consult with their own attorney about specific situations. Attorneys are not engaged in providing legal services while appearing on the program and are not responsible in any manner for the consequences that may stem directly or indirectly from reliance on any statement made during this program.
Good morning. Welcome to Fed Talk. I'm Bill Bransford, and today I'm here in the studio with Craig Floyd, Chairman of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. Craig, welcome to Fed Talk.
Good morning, Bill.
And this morning we're going to be talking about National Police Week 2010. And before we get into that discussion, I'd like to remind our listeners that Fed Talk is brought to you by GEICO, where you can save 15% on car insurance in just 15 minutes. For more information on GEICO, go to geico.com. And letting our listeners know that you can call in if you have a comment, an observation about Police Week, if you have a question about the National Law Officers Memorial Fund. Our toll-free number is 1-877-936-9333, or you can email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. So, Craig, tell me about what's going on next week. It's a busy time for you, isn't it?
Well, it really is, and this is an exciting time of the year for law enforcement and certainly for the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. National Police Week actually has been commemorated here in the United States since 1963. It was President John F. Kennedy who actually signed the law to set aside a week of the year that would honor the service and sacrifice of America's law enforcement professionals. And until 1982, it was all state and local ceremonies. But in 1982, the Fraternal Order of Police began a national ceremony here in Washington, D.C. to honor especially those officers who died in the line of duty. And since then, the ceremonies and the activities have grown in number. The first year, I think there were 125 people that showed up in Senate Park across from the U.S. Capitol. And since then, now we have 25,000 law enforcement professionals, survivors of officers killed in the line of duty who come to Washington every year during National Police Week.
And I remember the last few years, the motorcades of police officers during National Police Week here in Washington, and it does seem to grow every year. It's a nice follow-up. This week is Public Service Recognition Week, and there's a lot of activity on the Mall about public servants, and there's some law enforcement participation in that. But this next week just focuses on law enforcement, including federal employees who are law enforcement officials.
Absolutely. In fact, on the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, there are some 1,000 federal law enforcement professionals who've been killed in the line of duty. And of course, during National Police Week, we'll be honoring all of them, as well as the tens of thousands of federal officers who serve and protect each and every day here in the United States. You know, it's an interesting question I get asked a lot, Bill, in media interviews and the like, and that is, do we include federal officers? Do we include the Secret Service and the Border Patrol agents and the FBI? And of course we do. There really is no distinction when it comes to law enforcement service, whether you're a municipal officer serving a city or a county officer or a state police officer or a federal officer. These men and women are enforcing the laws of our nation, keeping the peace. It's a very dangerous job. Criminals don't differentiate. If you're the law and they're intent on doing harm or causing problems, then you're the enemy. And unfortunately, too many officers, whether it be federal, state, or local, are targeted simply because they're law enforcement professionals.
And that applies to the federal law enforcement, many of whom don't wear uniforms.
Absolutely. And, you know, that is an interesting distinction because clearly when you are walking the streets in uniform, driving around in a marked cruiser, for example, you become a target. You are literally a sitting duck if it comes to a criminal who is intent on killing a cop. We saw that in Lakewood, Washington last year, probably the most vivid, stark evidence of that type of behavior. You had a man who, while incarcerated, was on the phone telling his wife and others that he was going to kill a cop when he gets out of here. He is intent on doing it. And, you know, a lot of times I'm sure criminals might say things that they don't really mean. In this case, he meant it. As soon as he was let out of jail, he drove around. He saw some police cars parked in front of a coffee shop in Lakewood, Washington. He walked into that coffee shop, and there were other innocent citizens there. He didn't target them. He went right after the uniformed officers, gunned them down one by one, and four Lakewood, Washington officers are being added to the memorial this year because of that brazen, cold-blooded killer.
And we're going to talk more about the memorial a little bit later. But first, tell our listeners what's going to happen next week in National Police Week.
Well, there are just many, many activities planned. We have, for instance, the focal point of our year and our week is the Candlelight Vigil on May 13th. This is something that's happened now for 22 years in a row.
It's very impressive.
It's amazing, Bill, to see 20,000 people plus attending an event, packing into the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Grounds in Judiciary Square here in Washington. Thousands of officers in uniform, thousands of surviving family members who've lost an officer, many of them recently. The emotion is right there at the surface. You see a lot of tears, but you also see some warm smiles as we all hold our candles aloft at that point in the ceremony where we honor our fallen officers. We shine a blue laser light skyward as a symbol of the thin blue line of protection that law enforcement offers this nation. And then at the end of the ceremony, we read each of the names that's been added to the memorial this year. And unfortunately, we'll be adding over 300 new names to the memorial this year. 116 of those officers died in 2009, and 208 of those new additions died earlier in our history, and we're only now uncovering their stories through our research efforts.
That's very interesting. Are there other activities, or is that the...
Yeah, that of course is our focal point, but so many other activities occur, and you know, many of them are attended by literally thousands of people. In any other time of the year, you know, it would be a huge ceremony, but the Candlelight Vigil gets the real huge crowd, along with the Peace Officers Memorial Day service sponsored by the Fraternal Order of Police, and that's held on Saturday, May 15th at the U.S. Capitol. That's an 11 a.m. start. For those that may have heard a noontime start, they've actually moved it up to 11 a.m. at the Capitol on May 15th. We have a wonderful ceremony planned on May 12th in the afternoon, probably around 3 o'clock at the National Memorial. We'll be welcoming approximately 1,200 police officers on bikes who ride to Washington and raise money for the memorial fund, but more importantly, raise awareness about the officers who are killed in the line of duty. It's called the Police Unity Tour. It's been in existence since 1997, and last year as they arrived on the site, an amazing sight, by the way, 1,200 officers on bicycles riding into the memorial grounds after a 300-mile bike trek. It's a grueling journey, but they do it to honor the men and women who've died in the line of duty. And then last year, they presented me with a check for $1.3 million, money wow. that they all had raised throughout the year.
They had raised that in order to get the right to ride in the in
exactly.
the bike ride.
It costs $1,700 minimum payment to have the privilege of riding 300 miles on your bicycle over 3 days. But they do it for the right reasons, and we raise a lot of money to help support the Memorial Fund and all of our good works.
Anybody our listeners might have heard of who will be speaking at any of your events?
Well, the Attorney General of the United States is probably somebody familiar with a lot of your listeners. Our chief law enforcement official in the land, and tradition has it that the Attorney General is always the keynote speaker at our Candlelight Vigil. He will be again this year, Eric Holder. His brother, by the way, is a retired officer from the New York and New Jersey Port Authority Police Department. So he has a strong affinity for law enforcement and for what we do. And of course, Eric Holder has led the response to that terrorist threat that occurred in New York City this past week. The assailant was caught after some excellent investigative work led by Eric Holder and the Department of Justice. And he worked very closely with state and local law enforcement to make sure that that arrest occurred.
Now, a lot of good work by a number of police officers and law enforcement, which I think is a good chapter for National Police Week.
It's a wonderful way to begin the week, to know that they once again have thwarted the terrorists that threaten this nation. Since 9/11, while there have been many attempts, there has not been another terrorist attack that has been successful here in the United States. That's thanks to federal, state, and local law enforcement working together so well.
Craig, if somebody wants to learn more about National Police Week, is there a website?
I would suggest they go to our website, which is www.lawmemorial.org, lawmemorial, no punctuation, .org, and they'll see a click on that they can go to our National Police Week schedule of events. And they'll see the full list of activities that are planned. We have pipe band ceremonies. That's going to be on the evening of May 14th. We have Law Ride, which is police on motorcycles. That'll be occurring on May 9th around noon at the memorial. And just a whole array of activities. So www.lawmemorial.org.
You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're talking to Craig Floyd about Police Week 2010. We'll continue our discussion after this break.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this. If you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the Gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to Geico. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with Geico once they've switched. In fact, on average, Geico customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford, and I'm talking to Craig Floyd about Police Week 2010. If you have a question or a comment, please give us a call toll-free at 1-877-936-9333 or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Craig, you talked a little bit about all of the police officers in the country who died in the line of duty last year. How does that stack up to prior years?
Well, 116 federal, state, and local officers were killed in 2009. That's certainly the tragic, the bad news part of the story. The good news, however, in that number, it's the lowest fatality figure for law enforcement in a single year since 1959. 50 years ago, you have to go back that far before you find a year with fewer law enforcement fatalities than 2009. We've seen a nice trend downward over the past couple of years. If you look at 10-year statistics, the average number of officers killed each year, to put it in some perspective, 162. Now, that, of course, includes...
That's the average.
That's the average, 162. It includes 9/11, 2001, when 72 officers were killed in the terrorist attack. So, obviously, that year kind of skewed the numbers upwards. But still, you're talking in a normal year about 150-some officers killed. Last year, 116, lowest in 50 years.
And I think that's interesting, the 116 number, because there's a lot more law enforcement officers today in 2010 than there were in 1959.
Oh,
so the percentage is actually much lower.
Absolutely. And that's a great point, Bill, that you know, we have three times or more officers serving today than we did 50 years ago, and yet the numbers are still so low. I think that that really says a lot about the training that we're providing our officers today. It's so far superior to what they got 50 years ago, you know, 10 years ago even. We're learning so much from other incidents. Officers drive around now with in-car cameras, so traffic stops are filmed. And then if something should go wrong, we have the video footage that they can then ship out to training academies across this country and show those trainees, you know, what that officer perhaps could have done differently to prevent his or her fatality. That's just one example. Officers are wearing bullet-resistant vests. There was a time, you know, 10, 20 years ago, when not every officer was being provided a vest. And if they had one, it was maybe because their spouse or their parents bought it for them because they were concerned. Now the agencies themselves are providing vests. When they can't afford it, the federal government steps in and purchases vests for them through the Bulletproof Vest Partnership Act, which was passed several years ago. The bottom line is we're doing a better job of making it safer for our officers. Less lethal weapons, taser stun guns, a good example, give officers an added margin of safety when dealing with a resisting violent felon. That has helped to make it safer for our officers. And interestingly, and you know, tasers sometimes get a bad rep in the paper.
They do up in Philadelphia, especially.
Well,
the,
you know, there's questions about when tasers should and can be used. But I will tell you that the statistics are overwhelming in favor of using tasers. It tells you that when tasers are used by departments, the injuries to law enforcement officers goes way down, and also the injuries to criminal suspects goes way down as well. So it really helps everyone.
And I would imagine that's because a taser, while disabling, is not as lethal, and therefore it's easier to use. It's easier to pull the trigger on a taser.
It is, and you know, that obviously is reason for concern. Some law enforcement leaders are concerned that officers might use tasers in situations where maybe they should not, and they would be more likely to use a taser than lethal force. But, you know, think about it. Now, instead of simply having a choice of kill or be killed, if you're that officer, and all you have is that lethal weapon to defend yourself or to save an innocent person, now you have a non-lethal choice. And it means that, you know, instead of killing a criminal suspect who may be coming at you with a knife or a gun or threatening an innocent person, you have this non-lethal choice and you're going to apprehend him without really causing any harm to you or the victim.
But 116 is still too many, isn't it, Craig?
116 is, yes, a low number, but that means 116 lives literally ripped apart, families that are left to mourn their loved one's loss. Long after the funeral's over, these families are trying to put the pieces of their lives back together. It's tough. And we should never lose sight of that. I'd like to think, and I've said to groups like the International Association of Chiefs of Police, the National Sheriff's Association, other groups that are working to make it safer for our officers, if we continue to work together and make it a goal, I think realistically we can get that number below 100. We haven't seen that since the early 1950s, and I think it's within our reach, which I don't think I would have said that 5 or 10 years ago when the numbers were closer to 200 than they are to 100. But we are making a difference, and we're finding ways to make it safer for our officers. I hope that trend will continue.
And it's not just a case, Craig, of officers being shot with guns by criminals, but it's traffic accidents. There was a Montgomery County policeman just a few weeks ago that was killed in a car accident in the Wheaton area. Do you include those deaths in your numbers as well?
Absolutely. We've said from the beginning there really is no distinction, should not be a distinction between what's classified a felonious death versus an accidental death. I think that the word accident somehow implies that, you know, that officer did not make the same type of sacrifice of the officer who's assaulted by a criminal. That couldn't be farther from the truth. The fact of the matter is when we talk about traffic accidents or traffic crashes, we're talking about officers who were responding to emergency calls for help. They had to drive at higher speeds than they normally the rest of us would to stay safe. They oftentimes have to respond to emergency calls with rain-slickened roads, ice, snowy roads, very dangerous driving conditions. But they're thinking to themselves, every second could make the difference between life or death for that person in need. I'm going to get there as quick as I can, hopefully safely. But sometimes those officers lose control of the car going around a turn in a darkened roadway, road slick, and bad things can happen. Chasing down fleeing felons. These are felons that are threatening other people's lives. We've really cut back on the high-speed pursuits that used to be much more routine than they are today because we realize how much danger that causes not only to the officer but to other innocent citizens. But still, there are times when that fleeing felon has just killed somebody or has just raped a young child or abducted a child, as happened in Pennsylvania this past year. An officer named Joshua Miller, a state trooper in Pennsylvania, he was chasing at high rates of speed. I think the chase lasted about 40 miles. This man who had abducted a young child and had chased him, and they finally captured him, or at least stopped him. And as they went to check on the welfare of the child, the man started shooting at him, killed Joshua Miller. But they were in great harm's way throughout that chase, but they did it for the right reasons, to save an innocent child.
And you mentioned, Craig, a little bit earlier that there were several hundred names added to the memorial this year from prior years. You just found out about them. What types of situations are you talking about? And how do you find these circumstances that happened so many years ago?
We get a lot of help. We have a full-time research staff, three people that work full-time doing nothing but researching the officer fatalities that we want to honor and record for history's sake. And a lot of times it's a family member, maybe a grandson, who's found some paperwork in the attic about a relative, the grandfather perhaps, who was killed in the line of duty according to the newspaper articles, but his name's not on the National Memorial. So he brings it to our attention. We then start working with the agency involved. And once the agency realizes that, we had overlooked this particular death, had never notified you about it, but we agree that that officer should be honored, that they did die in the line of duty. And once we get that verification from the agency, that name will go on the National Memorial. And this year, 208 of those older deaths will be added. The earliest occurred in 1816. So it goes back a long way.
And these are all names that are on the National Memorial?
Today. But I'll give you a good example. When we dedicated that memorial in 1991, we had about 12,500 names on the memorial, and we thought the first officer killed at that time, and we made a big deal about it. We brought a lot of attention to this officer. His name was Robert Forsyth. He was a U.S. Marshal, one of the original 13 U.S. Marshals appointed to his post by George Washington. He served in what was then the territory of Georgia, and he was serving some arrest papers, and he was shot and killed by these two brothers. The bottom line is that occurred in January of 1794, and we said Robert Forsyth was the first officer killed in the line of duty. Well, about 5 years ago, a retired detective in New York City, while hunting through some old newspaper files, discovered a death that was earlier than Robert Forsyth. His name was Isaac Smith. He was shot and killed on May 17th, trying to make an arrest of an unruly drunken patron of a bar. And today, Isaac Smith is recognized on the memorial walls as the first officer ever to die in the line of duty.
And where is your memorial?
The memorial is located in Judiciary Square. Those familiar in Washington know that that's in the 400 block of E Street, Northwest Washington. For those thinking about the mall and the Capitol, it's just a little north of the mall, about two blocks north of the mall, and just a few blocks west of the U.S. Capitol. So about five-block walk to the U.S. Capitol from where we are at the National Memorial.
So all these names are on the memorial, and that's where the candlelight vigil will be on May 13th.
That's correct. And if you can imagine that three-acre site filled with 20,000 people, it's something to see. But it's neat to stand shoulder to shoulder with all these law enforcement officers from across the country and the surviving family members of those who've suffered this terrible loss.
So, Craig, how are we doing in 2010 as far as law enforcement fatalities are concerned?
Well, unfortunately, 2010, we've seen quite an uptick in the number of deaths from last year. 37% increase so far this year when you compare it to the same time last year. This year, the total number of fatalities so far is 56. Last year at the same time, to put it in perspective, 41 officers had been killed in the line of duty. We've seen an increase really in all categories of death this year. Firearms-related fatalities, we've had 20 so far this year versus 15 last year. That's a 33% increase. Traffic-related incidents, there have been 27 this year so far, 23 last year at the same time. That's a 17% increase. So we hopefully can continue to see a decline for the rest of the year. But again, the numbers this year are a bit troubling.
Okay, we're going to stop here for a short break. We'll continue our discussion with Craig Floyd about National Police Week when we return. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. When you say that you work for the federal government, many people out there immediately picture you wearing a suit, driving a government-issue sedan, and living in D.C. While that may be true for some, in reality, federal employees have a wider variety of jobs than most people could ever imagine, from postal workers to CIA agents, from working in an office to working in outer space. These jobs are all so different that it's hard to believe they have something in common, but they do. And that similarity is GEICO. As employees of the federal government, many of these people may be eligible for additional discounts on top of GEICO's already low rates. And just because the cost is lower doesn't mean that GEICO's service is anything less than top rate. So whether you're in animal control or air traffic control, call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO. Or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
I'm Deborah Roth, host of Fed Talk and partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. Our firm specializes in helping federal employees with legal issues concerning their jobs or benefits. For two decades, we have been representing federal employees in adverse action cases, employment discrimination complaints, inspector general and internal affairs investigations, security clearance issues, and other federal employment disputes. If you have a legal concern, don't wait. Call Shaw, Bransford & Roth at 202-463-8400 or visit our website at shawbransford.com.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Bill Bransford. We're talking to Craig Floyd about of the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund. We're talking about next week, which is National Police Week 2010. If you'd like to be a part of our discussion, give us a call, 1-877-936-9333. That's a toll-free number. Or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. And, of course, this is Fed Talk. You mentioned earlier that National Police Week does include the federal law enforcement community. Craig, can you tell me about the federal officers that died last year, I guess, and going back in history?
When you look at 2009, there were six federal law enforcement officers who died in the line of duty, which, put it in some perspective, is the same number we lost in 2008. So, unfortunately, there was no decline in the number of federal agents killed. We saw one incident in particular that got a lot of attention among the community, but certainly the nation. Three DEA agents were killed in a helicopter crash while conducting a counter-narcotics operation in Afghanistan, and that occurred on October 26th of last year. Those agents included Forrest Lehman, Chad Michael, and Michael Westo. And I remember being with the administrator of the Drug Enforcement Administration the day after. We had a ceremony actually honoring Vice President Biden, giving him our Distinguished Service Award, and that occurred that same day, really, October 26, later in the day. And all of us, just an outpouring of support and sympathy, certainly, to the families of those brave agents who lost their life, as well as to all DEA agents and their agency having to suffer such a terrible tragedy. We'll be adding those three DEA agents to the memorial on May 13th at our candlelight vigil. There were two Border Patrol agents killed last year. And unfortunately, the Border Patrol has one of the highest death totals of all the federal agencies. There are 104 Border Patrol agents on the memorial, including the two who died last year. That would be Cruz McGuire. He died on May 21st, died of cardiac arrest, actually, while tracking illegal aliens near the Rio Grande River. And Robert Rosas, Jr., he died on July 23rd while tracking illegal aliens near a place called Campo, California. As he exited his vehicle, he was killed by gunfire. So he was one of the officers last year who died because of gunfire, and a very dangerous job. We talk about illegal immigration. We talk about securing our borders. But what we don't talk nearly enough about is the brave Border Patrol agents that are out there risking their lives trying to secure our borders. Oh, it's one of the worst
really
of all. Tough places, tough people they have to deal with. And finally, the sixth federal agent killed last year was Paul Source. He's an FBI agent, died on March 9th, died in an automobile crash while participating in an operation in Detroit with the Violent Crime Task Force there.
Craig, we have an email from Kyle in Dayton, Ohio, and he has an interesting observation. He's talking about in his email some of the same things we've been discussing. Kyle says, there is nothing like the candlelight vigil. I can say this is my sixth year. I will be coming to Washington. There is one thing that sticks out of my mind, out in my mind, a story from years past. Kyle had a little girl walk up to him and ask him if he had a uniform patch she could have. He saw her survivor necklace that she was wearing. He was reading the name on it, and this seven-year-old girl knew that he was trying to see the name of her father on her necklace. She immediately told him that she was there for her daddy, who used to be a policeman, but a bad man shot him. And Kyle says that he can say that he immediately started crying right there at the memorial. And while he was crying, he had two law enforcement brothers he'd never met before stop, put their arms around him and console him. The reason he's telling this story in his email is that people don't really understand that police officers are human. Every law enforcement officer death, whether it's a corrections officer or an FBI agent, still hurts the same. He's going to be in D.C. Every year for as long as he's able to be with the families of his law enforcement brothers. That's quite a testament.
It really is. And Kyle, I've had some communication with Kyle over the years. And, you know, here's just one example of somebody that comes back year after year after year to attend these ceremonies. There may have been a tie to the memorial. Maybe he or she served with one of the officers whose names are inscribed on the memorial. But I'll tell you this, every one of them feels like they've lost a family member when there's a death in this country involving law enforcement. And you see it just like at Police Week. You see it at the police funerals. Literally thousands of people will show up at a police officer's funeral, many of them colleagues from all over the country. They didn't know that officer personally, but they feel like they've lost a member of their family. And so when you see these officers come to Washington during National Police Week, all of them feel like they're part of one big family. They're there to give each other support. They're there to build friendships. And most of all, it's a show of solidarity that they work together, whether they're federal, state, or local, whether they serve on the East Coast or the Midwest or the West Coast. All of them feel like there's this common bond that ties them together. And they're going to be here for each other just as they're here for the survivors of the fallen.
And Kyle, I thank you for that email. And I think, Craig, it's a testament to your leadership to put all of this together every year and make it grow. It has gotten bigger and more impressive each year.
It really has. And you know, Bill, thank you for that comment. But I will say this, that I am, and our organization is, but one piece of National Police Week. I remember working with a woman named Susie Sawyer close to, you know, 28 years ago, I guess it was, when she was putting on that first ceremony up in Senate Park to honor the fallen officers on behalf of the Fraternal Order of Police Auxiliary. She worked with a woman named Trudy Chapman. They were the early starters of that. A guy named Leo Marchetti was the president of the FOP. And from there, we built what's called the National Police Week Committee. This is a group of volunteers, many of them from federal, state, and local agencies here in the D.C. area, who volunteer their time to come to these planning meetings and then to actually put on National Police Week. When people go home, they don't know who put on what ceremony and who helped with what. They just know that it was an experience they will never forget, a very positive one. And I want to publicly thank all the volunteers, law enforcement, as well as citizen supporters who pull together to make National Police Week as special as it can be. The Fraternal Order of Police and their auxiliary put on the Peace Officers Memorial Day service. Concerns of Police Survivors puts on grief counseling sessions for the survivors of the fallen. We put on a number of activities at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial, including our candlelight vigil. A group called the National Association of Police Organizations sponsors an event called Top Cops, where they honor living officers across this country who do great things. We have an Officer of the Month luncheon that does the same thing. So it just goes on and on. There's activities for cops' kids, the surviving children of these men and women who've died. The FBI hosts it. The Fairfax County Police hosts the kids. It's just an amazing show of support. It's that can-do spirit that's so typical of every law enforcement officer in America. That's how National Police Week comes off.
And Craig, you are, as the chairman of National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, have an important role in that. How long have you been doing that?
Well, I actually had the privilege of serving with a congressman named Mario Biaggi. He was a legendary New York City police officer before he came to Congress. He served for 23 years as a New York City police officer. He was wounded 10 times in the line of duty. He is the most decorated cop in New York City history. At least he was when he retired in 1965. There may be one or two that have surpassed him since then. But with that as his background, he went to Congress where he served for 20 years. And he became the go-to guy for law enforcement related issues, among other causes. He was involved in just about every issue you can imagine, but law enforcement was near and dear to his heart. So one of the issues they wanted him to help with was leading the charge to build the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. I happened to be his legislative assistant for 10 of those years he served in Congress, and one of my pet projects was to build this memorial. And after we enacted the law, he basically gave me the privilege of serving as the chief executive officer from day one for this organization and to build the memorial. And we've continued it ever since. So that was 1984. I've been doing it now about 26 years.
So this memorial is based on federal statute?
It is, as is typical for any national memorial here in our nation's capital built on federal property. You have to get the approval of Congress, the authorization of Congress. So, yes, this was built, the memorial, with the seal and approval of the United States Congress, signed into law by President Reagan. And when it was dedicated, President George H.W. Bush, 41, was there along with his wife Barbara to do the official duty.
So you've been involved there since, you said 26 years, and National Police Week has been going on for how long?
Since 1982. That was 28 years ago. I don't have a lot of regrets in life, Bill, but one of those regrets is that I did not attend that first Peace Officers Memorial Day service in Senate Park. It was a Saturday. Back then, I must say that the work I was doing with Congressman Biaggi on behalf of law enforcement, I might consider it more of a job. And today, it's totally consumed me. It's who I am. It's what I want to do. And I would not have missed that first ceremony in Senate Park if I knew then what I know today about how important it is that we show our support and respect to the men and women in law enforcement. I'm a private citizen. I get to hear these heroic stories every day. And if every citizen in this country got to hear those stories and got to meet these law enforcement professionals, they would be out there with us at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial on May 13th to show their respect and appreciation. Appreciation for the men and women in law enforcement, especially those who've lost their life. But I will say that I've attended every Peace Officers Memorial Day service since 1982, and I feel real good about that.
Okay, well, good. And what about the You talked about the federal officer deaths. There's six last year, six the year before, I think you said. What about going back in history? How have the federal law enforcement officers, are those numbers consistent with what history has shown?
Well, we now have about 1,000 federal law enforcement officers on the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. And as I mentioned earlier, the story about Robert Forsyth, who we thought was the first law enforcement officer
killed. He was federal law enforcement.
He was the first federal law enforcement officer killed, and he still certainly wears that honor, a dubious distinction certainly. But nevertheless, we always honor Robert Forsyth. This year, to give you a good sense of it, the Marshal Service, which has more officers, more federal officers on the memorial than any other agency with 245, we're actually adding 14 U.S. Marshals, Deputy U.S. Marshals, who've served earlier in our history, who were not on the memorial up until this year.
And U.S. Marshals, and we've had the U.S. Marshals on Fed Talk before, and what they point out is that they were law enforcement in the Old West when those parts of the country were just territories. They were the principal law enforcement, so they suffered or served under some dangerous times and circumstances.
Certainly, and when you look at the numbers, you're going to see a lot more Deputy U.S. Marshals died earlier in our history, back in the 1800s, the early 1900s, than have died recently. They still have a very dangerous, very important role in our society. But yeah, during those early days, they were the law of the land in some of those very remote outposts, if you will, certainly in what was frontier America at the time. But this year we're adding 14 Deputy U.S. Marshals who we did not know about until they helped us research those deaths and verify them. The earliest was a guy named Edward Gorsuch. He died on September 11th, 1851. He was shot and killed. And then there are a number after them. We're also adding a Coast Guardsman from this year, a guy named Edward Culbertson, Petty Officer First Class. A lot of people don't realize that the Coast Guard is a very important part of American law enforcement. They serve now under the Department of Homeland Security. But we have a number of Coast Guardsmen who are on the memorial. And this year we're going to be adding Edgar Culbertson, who died back on April 30th, 1967.
We're going to stop one last time here. When we return, we're going to talk a little bit about the National Law Enforcement Museum, a very exciting project. You're listening to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
And now, a word from our good friends at GEICO, where you could save 15% on car insurance. By now, you've no doubt seen those car insurance commercials with the talking gecko on TV. He's always talking about how people could save 15% or more switching to GEICO. Well, that sounds like a pretty good deal in and of itself. But get this, if you're an employee of the federal government, you may be eligible to save even more than that. That's something the Gecko didn't mention in all those commercials. And you've probably heard many times about how many people have switched to Geico. Millions. But what you might not know is how many people stay with Geico once they've switched. In fact, on average, Geico customers who are federal employees have stayed with the company for over 20 years. Now that's customer satisfaction. Sound like a good deal to you? Then just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO or go online to geico.com and find out how much you could save.
Welcome back to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is the last segment of the show. We're talking to Craig Floyd. We're going to be talking about the National Law Enforcement Officers Museum. Please give us a call on our toll-free number, 1-877-936-9333, or email us at fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Craig, what about the National Law Enforcement Museum?
Well, this is something that just seemed like the natural next step in our efforts to honor the service and sacrifice of law enforcement in this country. The National Memorial is very impressive. Anyone that's seen it can't help but notice row after row after row of names of officers who've sacrificed their lives for this nation. It makes a strong statement, and it makes us perhaps appreciate our officers a lot more than we would have otherwise. But one of the things that's missing at that monument is the stories behind these men and women who've made the ultimate sacrifice. Who were they? What made them so special? Why did they become law enforcement professionals? A lot of them had fathers and grandfathers and great-grandfathers who served this profession. It tends to run in families. A lot of them have done extremely meaningful work while they served in law enforcement. Some of them served very briefly, you know, maybe a few days or a few years. Many of them served 20 or 30 years before they made the ultimate sacrifice. But every one of them touched a lot of lives while they were in law enforcement service. We want to be able to tell those inspiring stories. I'm a big believer that if more and more people heard those stories, they would, in fact, do more with their own lives. I think we have to realize that these men and women died for us so that we can enjoy the life that we have, the liberties, the freedoms, the opportunities. And hopefully when we realize that people have died for us so that we could have those privileges, that we will take advantage of this time we have here on Earth. And I want to tell those stories. This museum will allow us to do that. We have a featured area the museum set aside. It's called the Hall of Remembrance. And that's where we'll tell the story behind every name on the National Memorial, 19,000 stories to date that need to be told. We'll also be able to display the mementos that have been left at the National Memorial during National Police Week, which will allow us to make a strong statement showing that this is about more than just names and numbers. This is about human lives that have been deeply affected because this person died in the line of duty.
So when can the public expect to go to this museum?
This museum will hopefully open, if everything stays on schedule, late 2013. Still a few years away, but it'll be here before we know it. We've been working on it ever since 2000 when Congress authorized this museum to be built. They directed our organization to be the ones responsible for designing the museum, raising the money, getting the public approvals that are so necessary whenever you build anything here in Washington. And the bottom line is we've made a lot of progress. We've planned groundbreaking for October 14th of this year. So after
that
10 years.
You must be very excited about that.
Oh, my goodness.
I've talked to you before about the museum, and it seems a bit in the distance, and now it's ready to go.
Yeah, it's as light as finally at the end of the tunnel, Bill, and all of us at the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund, we have an incredible staff that's working. You know, every day we wake up, we think about, you know, how can we raise the money we need? How can we make sure that this museum has the best content possible for that museum? How can we navigate the approvals that we need? It's a very difficult journey to build a national museum of this stature and nature, but we're almost there. And we still need to raise a few more dollars. We've now crossed the $40 million mark, which is the halfway point in terms of all the funds we need to build this thing.
You've got enough money to start, but you still need more money. And so how can somebody contribute?
Well, the best thing to do, go to our website, www.lawmemorial.org. It's the same website that they can get all the other information about our organization. You click on the museum tab at the top, and you'll see how to make a donation to help build the National Law Enforcement Museum. One of the things we're doing, and I'll encourage people to check this out online as well, we've now created a special groundbreaking challenge coin. And anybody in law enforcement or the military knows about challenge coins.
Sure, they're very much valued.
They are, and they're collectibles. And we're selling one now for $20. $10 of which will go to build the National Law Enforcement Museum. So they not only get a wonderful collectible that they can keep forever, but they can also help invest themselves in the National Law Enforcement Museum.
And I assume that's the donations to the museum are tax deductible?
That is correct. We're a 501c3, so anyone that wants to make a donation to the museum can certainly deduct it from their taxes as permitted by law.
So I assume, Craig, since you have a groundbreaking date of October 14th, that you have the paperwork, the approvals of the D.C. government, the federal government to start that. Everything's in place, and so you must have a location.
Well, we do, and in fact, Congress gave it to us in the authorizing legislation. It's the land right across the street from the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial. All of us agreed, Congress certainly did, that we needed to build this museum right where our national memorial is. That way, those two important institutions would be joined at the hip, if you will, so that people people visiting the memorial would easily be able to go across the street and learn the history behind law enforcement, behind the names on those memorial walls. And those that come to visit the museum will realize, whoa, right out the front door, we can go across the street and see the national monument that this nation has dedicated to the law enforcement professionals. So it works beautifully. We worked out a wonderful arrangement with the D.C. courts. Those familiar with that area know that the D.C. Court of Appeals just finished a wonderful renovation of the original City Hall here in Washington, D.C., built back in 1820. And they now have an entrance that looks out on our memorial. And pretty soon our entrance pavilions for this museum will be right alongside. And we will share that courthouse plaza that exists there today along E Street, 400 block of E Street Northwest.
Yes. I understand most of the museum will be underground.
That's true. Congress, when they gave us the land, agreed that it needed to be right where the memorial is. But they said, you know, that's a very historic area surrounded by historic buildings and courthouses. We need to build most of the museum underground. They didn't want a modern 3-4-story building getting in the way of those beautiful historic structures. So most of our museum will be underground, but we will have two beautiful glass entrance pavilions that people will be invited into, and then we'll descend down into the underground area where the main exhibit hall will be.
So in addition to remembering the fallen law enforcement officers, there's going to be some other aspects to the museum. I know I've talked to you about it before. So there's going to be some fun activities, I think, as part of it.
Any new museum today, Bill, needs to be high-tech and interactive to really get a response, especially from young people. It's no longer enough to put a historic document under a glass and expect to get oohs and ahs from your visitors. That's not what they're looking for today. So we're going to have a lot of high-tech interactive educational experiences. We'll have a forensic science lab where people will get clues from real crimes that occurred in our history. Then they'll go to a fingerprint station or a DNA station or a blood spatter station. They'll learn how forensic science is used by law enforcement to solve crimes. Motorola sponsored the 911 emergency call center, where the visitor becomes the dispatcher, and you learn all of a sudden how that veil of secrecy about 911 emergency call systems is before you, and you learn how it's used to get an emergency response within seconds of a phone call. We'll have a wonderful area on behalf of our correctional officers, often a forgotten segment of law enforcement, and we'll hear from real correctional officers in their voices what it's like to be behind the bars with these hardened criminals and how life behind a correctional institution really is.
And a federal law enforcement community will be represented in your museum?
Absolutely. In fact, one of our prized possessions of our artifact collection, which now numbers over 10,000, is we're going to have the oral histories of the former agents of the FBI. They've actually undertaken a oral history project that they've created for us. Brian Holstein, a former agent, is the head of that. And they wanted to make those oral histories available to the public. And they heard about our museum effort, and we are now the caretakers of the oral histories of these former FBI agents. So we've got a lot of exciting artifacts and information related to ATF and FBI and Secret Service, Border Patrols, on and on. And all of that will be on display in the National Law Enforcement Museum.
So do you have a plan what the museum is going to look like? Can somebody see that plan? Do you have it on your website?
We do. In fact, there's a virtual tour that people can take. You can actually see what this museum experience will be like years before the doors are ever open. And a lot of our work right now, we've already created educational programs. We've gone into a D.C. school with a police officer and our director of education, and they've taught these students the value of law enforcement. That's a big part of what we're trying to accomplish.
Okay, so people can go to your website again. They can see the museum. They can see what it's going to look like. They can make a contribution. Where's the website?
www.lawmemorial.org.
And real quick again, Craig, what's the highlight of next week, National Police Week 2010?
Well, to us, it's the Candlelight Vigil, because that we host it, and it's at the National Memorial. I would say that, and the May 15th Peace Officers Memorial Day service at the Capitol. People should turn out for both.
All right, Craig, thank you very much for being our guest on Fed Talk this morning. I wish you a lot of success. Have a great week next week. And to our listeners, have a good weekend. Fed Talk is brought to you each week by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth.